This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents House of Earth and Blood, Crescent City, Book 1. Written by Sarah J. Maas. Performed by Elizabeth Evans.
The Four Houses of Midgard, as decreed in 33 VE by the Imperial Senate in the Eternal City. House of Earth and Blood. Shifters, humans, witches, ordinary animals, and many others to whom C'thona calls, as well as some chosen by Luna. House of Sky and Breath. Malachim, angels, Fae, elementals, sprites, and those who are blessed by Solas, along with some favored by Luna. Note, sprites were kicked out of their house as a result of their participation in the fall, and are now considered lowers, though many of them refuse to accept this. House of Many Waters, river spirits, mare, water beasts, nymphs, kelpies, nox, and others watched over by Ogenis. House of Flame and Shadow, demonaki, reapers, wraiths, vampires, draki, dragons, necromancers, and many wicked and unnamed things that even Erd herself cannot see. Part 1. The Hollow. Chapter 1. There was a wolf at the gallery door, which meant it must be Thursday, which meant Bryce had to be really godsdamned tired if she relied on Danica's comings and goings to figure out what day it was. The heavy metal door to Griffin Antiquities thudded with the impact of the wolf's fist, a fist that Bryce knew ended in metallic purple-painted nails in dire need of a manicure. A heartbeat later, a female voice barked, half-muffled through the steel, "Open the hell up, Bee! It's hot as shit out here!" Seated at the desk in the modest gallery showroom, Bryce smirked and pulled up the front door's video feed. Tucking a strand of her wine-red hair behind a pointed ear, she asked into the intercom, "Why are you covered in dirt? You look like you've been rootling through the garbage."
"What the fuck does rootling mean?"
Danica hopped from foot to foot, sweat gleaming on her brow. She wiped at it with a filthy hand, smearing the black liquid splattered there. "You'd know if you ever picked up a book, Danica." Glad for the break in what had been a morning of tedious research, Bryce smiled as she rose from the desk. With no exterior windows, the gallery's extensive surveillance equipment served as her only warning of who stood beyond its thick walls. Even with her sharp half-fey hearing, she couldn't make out much beyond the iron door, save for the occasional banging fist. The building's unadorned sandstone walls belied the latest tech and grade-A spellwork that kept it operational and preserved many of the books in the archives below. As if merely thinking about the level beneath Bryce's high heels had summoned her, a little voice asked from behind the 6-inch-thick archives door to her left,
"Is that Danica?"
"Yes, Lahaba." Bryce wrapped her hand around the front door's handle. The enchantments on it hummed against her palm, slithering like smoke over her freckled golden skin. She gritted her teeth and withstood it, still unused to the sensation even after a year of working at the gallery. From the other side of the deceptively simple metal door to the archives, Lahaba warned,
"Jessica doesn't like her in here."
"You don't like her in here," Bryce amended, her amber eyes narrowing toward the archives door and the tiny fire sprite she knew was hovering just on the other side, eavesdropping as she always did whenever someone stood out front. "Go back to work." Lahaba didn't answer, presumably drifting back downstairs to guard the books below. Rolling her eyes, Bryce yanked open the front door, getting a face full of heat so dry it threatened to suck the life from her, and summer had only just begun. Danica didn't just look like she'd been rootling through the garbage, she smelled like it, too. Wisps of her silvery blonde hair, normally a straight silken sheet, curled from her tight long braid, the streaks of amethyst, sapphire, and rose splattered with some dark, oily substance that reeked of metal and ammonia.
"Took you long enough,"
Danica groused, and swaggered into the gallery, the sword strapped at her back, bobbing with each step. Her braid had become tangled in its worn leather hilt, and as she stopped before the desk, Bryce took the liberty of prying the plate free. She'd barely untangled it before Danica's slim fingers were unbuckling the straps that kept the sword sheathed across her worn leather motorcycle jacket. "I need to dump this here for a few hours," she said, pulling the sword off her back and aiming for the supply closet hidden behind a wooden panel across the showroom. Bryce leaned against the lip of the desk and crossed her arms, fingers brushing against the stretchy black fabric of her skin-tight dress.
"Your gym bag's already stinking up the place. Jessup is due back later this afternoon. She'll throw your shit in the dumpster again if it's still here."
It was the mildest hell Jessup Aroga could unleash if provoked. A 400-year-old enchantress who'd been born a witch and defected, Jessup had joined the House of Flame and Shadow and now answered only to the Underking himself. Flame and Shadow suited her well. She possessed an arsenal of spells to rival any sorcerer or necromancer in the darkest of the houses. She'd been known to change people into animals when irritated enough. Bryce had never dared ask if the small animals in the dozen tanks and terrariums had always been animals. And Bryce tried never to irritate her, not that there were any safe sides when the Vanir were involved. Even the least powerful of the Vanir, a group that covered every being on Midgard aside from humans and ordinary animals, could be deadly.
"I'll get it later," Danica promised, pushing on the hidden panel to spring it open. Bryce had warned her 3 times now that the showroom supply closet wasn't her personal locker. Yet Danica always countered that the gallery, located in the heart of the old square, was more centrally located than the wolf's den over in Moonwood. And that was that. The supply closet opened, and Danica waved a hand in front of her face.
"My gym bag's stinking up the place."
With a black boot, she towed the sagging duffel that held Bryce's dance gear, currently wedged between the mop and bucket.
"When the fuck did you last wash those clothes?"
Bryce wrinkled her nose at the reek of old shoes and sweaty clothing that wafted out. Right. She'd forgotten to bring home the leotard and tights to wash after a lunchtime class 2 days ago, mostly thanks to Danica sending her a video of a heap of mirthroot on their kitchen counter. Music already blasting from the beat-up boombox by the windows, along with a command to hurry home quick. Bryce had obeyed. They'd smoked enough that there was a good chance Bryce had still been high yesterday morning when she'd stumbled into work. There was really no other explanation for why it had taken 10 minutes to type out a 2-sentence email that day, letter by letter.
"Never mind that," Bryce said. "I have a bone to pick with you."
Danica rearranged the crap in the closet to make space for her own.
"I told you I was sorry I ate your leftover noodles. I'll buy you more tonight."
"It's not that, dumbass. Though again, fuck you. That was my lunch for today."
Danica chuckled.
"This tattoo hurts like hell," Bryce complained. "I can't even lean against my chair."
Danica countered in a sing-song voice.
"The artist warned you it'd be sore for a few days."
"I was so drunk I spelled my name wrong on the waiver. I'd hardly say I was in a good place to understand what sore for a few days meant."
Danica, who'd gotten a matching tattoo of the text now scrolling down Bryce's back, had already healed. One of the benefits to being a full-blooded Vanir, swift recovery time compared to humans, or a half-human like Bryce. Danica shoved her sword into the mess of the closet.
"I promise I'll help you ice your sore back tonight. Just let me take a shower, and I'll be out of here in 10.
It wasn't unusual for her friend to pop into the gallery, especially on Thursdays, when her morning patrol ended just a few blocks away. But she'd never used the full bathroom in the archives downstairs. Bryce motioned to the dirt and grease.
"What is that on you?"
Danica scowled, the angular planes of her face scrunching.
"I had to break up a fight between a satyr and a night stalker."
She bared her white teeth at the black substance crusting her hands.
"Guess which one spewed its juices onto me?"
Bryce snorted and gestured to the archive's door.
"Shower's yours, There are some clean clothes in the bottom drawer of the desk down there.
Danica's filthy fingers began pulling the handle of the archive's door. Her jaw tightened. The older tattoo on her neck, the horned, grinning wolf that served as the sigil for the pack of devils, rippling with tension.
Not from the effort, Bryce realized, as she noted Danica's stiff back.
Bryce glanced to the supply closet, which Danica had not bothered to shut.
The sword, famed both in this city and far beyond it, leaned against the push broom and mop. Its ancient leather scabbard nearly obscured by the full container of gasoline used to fuel the electric generator out back. Bryce had always wondered why Jessica bothered with an old-fashioned generator, until the citywide first light outage last week. When the power had failed, only the generator had kept the mechanical locks in place during the looting that followed, when creeps had rushed in from the meat market, bombarding the gallery's front door with counterspells to break through the enchantments. But Danica ditching the sword in the office, Danica needing to take a shower, her stiff back. Bryce asked, "You've got a meeting with the city heads?" In the 5 years since they'd met as freshmen at Crescent City University, Bryce could count on one hand the number of times Danica had been called in for a meeting, with the 7 people important enough to merit a shower and change of clothes. Even while delivering reports to Danica's grandfather, the prime of the Valbaran wolves, and to Sabine, her mother, Danica usually wore that leather jacket, jeans, and whatever vintage band t-shirt wasn't dirty. Of course, it pissed Sabine off to no end, but everything about Danica and Bryce pissed off the alpha of the Scythe Moon Pack, chief among the shifter units in the city's auxiliary. It didn't matter that Sabine was the prime apparent of the Valbaran wolves and had been her aging father's heir for centuries, or that Danica was officially second in line to the title. Not when whispers had swirled for years that Danica should be tapped to be the prime apparent, bypassing her mother. Not when the old wolf had given his granddaughter their family's heirloom sword, after centuries of promising it to Sabine only upon his death. The blade had called to Danica on her 18th birthday like a howl on a moonlit night, the prime had said to explain his unexpected decision. Sabine had never forgotten that humiliation, especially when Danica carried the blade nearly everywhere, especially in front of her mother. Danica paused in the gaping archway, atop the green-carpeted steps that led down to the archives beneath the gallery, where the true treasure in this place lay, guarded by Lahaba day and night. It was the real reason why Danica, who'd been a history major at CCU, liked to drop by so often, just to browse the ancient art and books, despite Bryce's teasing about her reading habits. Danica turned, her caramel eyes shuttered.
"Philip Briggs is being released today."
Bryce started. "What?
They're letting him go on some goddamned technicality. Someone fucked up the paperwork. We're getting the full update in the meeting."
She clenched her slim jaw, the glow from the first lights in the glass sconces along the stairwell bouncing off her dirty hair.
"It's so fucked up."
Bryce's stomach churned. The human rebellion remained confined to the northern reaches of Pangera, the sprawling territory across the Haldron Sea. But Philip Briggs had done his best to bring it over to Valbara.
"You and the pack busted him right in his little rebel bomb lab, though."
Danica tapped her booted foot on the green carpet.
"Bureaucratic fucking nonsense."
"He was going to blow up a club. You literally found his blueprints for blowing up the White Raven."
As one of the most popular nightclubs in the city, the loss of life would have been catastrophic. Briggs's previous bombings had been smaller, but no less deadly, all designed to trigger a war between the humans and Vanir, to match the one raging in Pangera's colder climes. Briggs made no secret of his goal, a global conflict that would cost the lives of millions on either side, lives that were expendable, if it meant a possibility for humans to overthrow those who oppressed them. The magically gifted and long-lived Vanir, and above them, the Asteri, who ruled the planet Midgard from the Eternal City in Pangera.
But Danica and the pack of devils had stopped the plot. She'd busted Briggs and his top supporters, all part of the Kara's rebels, and spared innocents from their brand of fanaticism. As one of the most elite shifter units in Crescent City's auxiliary, the pack of devils patrolled the old square, making sure drunken, handsy tourists didn't become drunken, dead tourists when they approached the wrong person. Making sure the bars and cafes and music halls and shops stayed safe from whatever lowlife had crawled into town that day. And making sure people like Briggs were in prison. The 33rd Imperial Legion claimed to do the same, but the angels who made up the fabled ranks of the governor's personal army just glowered and promised hell if challenged. "Believe me," Danica said, stomping down the stairs, "I'm going to make it perfectly fucking clear in this meeting that Briggs's release is unacceptable." She would. Even if Danica had to snarl in Micah Domitus's face, she'd get her point across. There weren't many who'd dare piss off the Archangel of Crescent City, but Danica wouldn't hesitate. And given that all 7 heads of the city would be at this meeting, the odds of that happening were high. Things tended to escalate swiftly when they were in one room. There was little love lost between the 6 lower heads in Crescent City, the metropolis formerly known as Lunathian. Each head controlled a specific part of the city. The Prime of the Wolves in Moonwood, the Fey Autumn King in 5 Roses, the Under King in the Bone Quarter, the Viper Queen in the Meat Market, the Oracle in the Old Square, and the River Queen, who very rarely made an appearance, representing the House of Many Waters and her blue court far beneath the Istros River's turquoise surface. She seldom deigned to leave it. The humans in Asphodel Meadows had no head, no seat at the table. Philip Briggs had found more than a few sympathizers because of it. But Micah, head of the Central Business District, ruled over them all. Beyond his city titles, he was Archangel of Valbara, ruler of this entire fucking territory, and answerable only to the 6 Asteri in the Eternal City, the capital and beating heart of Pangera, of the entire planet of Midgard. If anyone could keep Briggs in prison, it would be him. Danica reached the bottom of the stairs, so far below that she was cut off from sight by the slope of the ceiling. Bryce lingered in the archway, listening as Danica said, "Hey, Syrinx." A little yip of delight from the 30-pound chimera rose up the stairs. Jessica had purchased the lower creature 2 months ago, to Bryce's delight. "He is not a pet," Jessica had warned her. "He's an expensive, rare creature, bought for the sole purpose of assisting Lahaba in guarding these books. Do not interfere with his duties." Bryce had so far failed to inform Jessica that Syrinx was more interested in eating, sleeping, and getting belly rubs than monitoring the precious books. No matter that her boss might see that at any point, should she bother to check the dozens of camera feeds in the library. Danica drawled, the smirk audible in her voice. "What's got your panties in a twist, Lahaba?" The fire sprite grumbled,
"I don't wear panties or clothes. They don't pair well when you're made of flame, Danica."
Danica snickered. Before Bryce could decide whether to go downstairs to referee the match between the fire sprite and the wolf, the phone on the desk began ringing. She had a good idea of who it would be. Heels sinking into the plush carpeting, Bryce reached the phone before it went to audio mail, sparing herself a 5-minute lecture. "Hi, Jessica." A beautiful, lilting female voice answered, "Please tell Danica Fendir that if she continues to use the supply closet as her own personal locker, I will turn her into a lizard." Chapter 2. By the time Danica emerged on the gallery's showroom floor, Bryce had endured a mildly threatening reprimand from Jessica about her ineptitude, 1 email from a fussy client demanding Bryce expedite the paperwork on the ancient urn she'd bought so she could show it off to her equally fussy friends at her cocktail party on Monday, and 2 messages from members of Danica's pack,
inquiring about whether their alpha was about to kill someone over Briggs' release. Natalie, Danica's third, had gotten straight to the point.
Has she lost her shit about Briggs yet?
Connor Holstrom, Danica's second, took a little more care with what he sent out into the ether. There was always a chance of a leak.
Have you spoken to Danica?
Was all he'd asked. Bryce was writing back to Connor,
yes, I've got it covered.
When a gray wolf the size of a small horse pushed the Iron Archives door shut with a paw, claws clicking on the metal.
You hated my clothes that much?
Bryce asked, rising from her seat. Only Danica's caramel eyes remained the same in this form, and only those eyes softened the pure menace and grace the wolf radiated with each step toward the desk.
I've got them on, don't worry.
Long, sharp fangs flashed with each word. Danica cocked her fuzzy ears, taking in the computer that had been shut down, the purse Bryce had set on the desk.
You're coming out with me? I've got to do some sleuthing for Jessica.
Bryce grabbed the ring of keys that opened doors into various parts of her life.
She's been hounding me about finding Luna's horn again, as if I haven't been trying to find it nonstop for the last week.
Danica glanced to one of the visible cameras in the showroom, mounted behind a decapitated statue of a dancing faun dating back 10,000 years. Her bushy tail swished once. Why does she even want it? Bryce shrugged.
I haven't had the balls to ask.
Danica stalked to the front door, careful not to let her claws snag a single thread in the carpet.
I doubt she's going to return it to the temple out of the goodness of her heart. I have a feeling Jessica would leverage its return to her advantage, Bryce said.
They strode onto the quiet street a block off the Istros, the midday sun baking the cobblestones, Danica a solid wall of fur and muscle between Bryce and the curb. The theft of the sacred horn during the power outage had been the biggest news story out of the disaster. Looters had used the cover of darkness to break into Luna's temple and swipe the ancient Fey relic from its resting place atop the lap of the massive enthroned deity. The Archangel Micah himself had offered a hefty reward for any information regarding its return, and promised that the sacrilegious bastard who'd stolen it would be brought to justice, also known as a public crucifixion. Bryce always made a point of not going near the square in the CBD, where they were usually held. On certain days, depending on the wind and heat, the smell of blood and rotting flesh could carry for blocks. Bryce fell into step beside Danica as the massive wolf scanned the street, nostrils sniffing for any hint of a threat. Bryce, as half-fey, could scent people in greater detail than the average human. She'd entertained her parents endlessly as a kid by describing the scents of everyone in their little mountain town, Nidaros. Humans possessed no such way to interpret the world. But her abilities had nothing on her friends. As Danica scented the street, her tail wagged once, and not from happiness.
Chill, Bryce said. You'll make your case to the heads, then they'll figure it out.
Danica's ears flattened. It's all fucked, B. All of it.
Bryce frowned. You really mean to tell me that any of the heads want a rebel like Briggs at large? They'll find some technicality and throw his ass right back in jail.
She added, because Danica still wouldn't look at her.
There's no way the 33rd's not monitoring his every breath. Briggs so much as blinks wrong, and he'll see what kind of pain angels can rain down on us all. Hell, the governor might even send the Umbra Mortis after him.
Micah's personal assassin, with the rare gift of lightning in his veins, could eliminate almost any threat. Danica snarled, teeth gleaming.
I can handle Briggs myself. I know you can. Everyone knows you can, Danica.
Danica surveyed the street ahead, glancing past a poster of the 6 enthroned Asteri tacked up on a wall, with an empty throne to honor their fallen sister, but loosed a breath. She would always have burdens and expectations to shoulder that Bryce would never have to endure, and Bryce was thankful as hell for that privilege. When Bryce fucked up, Jessica usually griped for a few minutes, and that was that. When Danica fucked up, it was blasted on news reports and across the interweb. Sabine made sure of it. Bryce and Sabine had hated each other from the moment the Alpha had sneered at her only child's improper half-breed roommate that first day at CCU. And Bryce had loved Danica from the moment her new roommate had offered her hand in greeting anyway, and then said Sabine was just pissy because she'd been hoping for a muscle-bound vampire to drool over. Danica rarely let the opinions of others, especially Sabine, eat away at her swagger and joy. Yet on rough days like this, Bryce lifted a hand and ran it down Danica's muscled ribs, a comforting, sweeping stroke. "Do you think Briggs will come after you or the pack?" Bryce asked, her stomach twisting. Danica hadn't busted Briggs alone. He had a score to settle with all of them. Danica's snout wrinkled. "I don't know." The words echoed between them. In hand-to-hand combat, Briggs would never survive against Danica, but one of those bombs would change everything. If Danica had made the drop into immortality, she'd probably survive. But since she hadn't, since she was the only one of the pack of devils who hadn't yet done it. Bryce's mouth turned dry.
"Be careful,"
Bryce said quietly.
"I will,"
Danica said, her warm eyes still full of shadows. But then she tossed her head, as if shaking it free of water, the movement purely canine. Bryce often marveled at this, that Danica could clear away her fears, or at least bury them, enough to move onward. Indeed, Danica changed the subject.
"Your brother will be at the meeting today."
"Half-brother." Bryce didn't bother to correct her. "Half-brother and full fey prick." "And?"
"Just thought I'd warn you that I'll be seeing him."
The wolf's face softened slightly. "He's going to ask me how you're doing." "Tell Rune I'm busy doing important shit and to go to hell." Danica huffed a laugh.
"Where exactly are you doing this sleuthing for the horn?"
"The temple," Bryce said with a sigh. "Honestly, I've been looking into this thing for days on end and can't figure out anything. No suspects, no murmurings at the meat market about it being for sale, no motive for who'd even bother with it. It's famous enough that whoever's got it has it wrapped up tight." She frowned at the clear sky.
"I almost wonder if the power outage was tied to it, if someone shut down the city's grid to steal it in the chaos. There are about 20 people in this city capable of being that crafty, and half of them possess the resources to pull it off."
Danica's tail twitched.
"If they're able to do something like that, I'd suggest staying away. Lead Jessaba around a bit, make her think you're looking for it, and then let it drop. Either the horn will show up by then, or she'll move on to her next stupid quest."
Bryce admitted,
It'd be good to find the horn. For my own career."
Whatever the hell that would be. A year of working at the gallery hadn't sparked anything beyond disgust at the obscene amounts of money that rich people squandered on old-ass shit.
Danica's eyes flickered.
"Yeah, I know."
Bryce zipped a tiny golden pendant, a knot of three entwined circles, along the delicate chain around her neck. Danica went on patrol armed with claws, a sword, and guns, but Bryce's daily armor consisted solely of this, an Arkesian amulet barely the size of her thumbnail, gifted by Jessaba on the first day of work.
"A hazmat suit and a necklace,"
Danica had marveled, when Bryce had shown off the amulet's considerable protections against the influence of various magical objects. Arkesian amulets didn't come cheap, but Bryce didn't bother to delude herself into thinking her boss's gift was given out of anything but self-interest. It would have been an insurance nightmare if Bryce didn't have one. Danica nodded to the necklace.
"Don't take that off, especially if you're looking into shit like the horn."
Even though the horn's mighty powers had long been dead, if it had been stolen by someone powerful, she'd need every magical defense against them.
Yeah,
Bryce said, though Danica was right. She'd never taken the necklace off since getting it. If Jessaba ever kicked her to the curb, she knew she'd have to find some way to make sure the necklace came with her. Danica had said as much several times,
unable to stop that alpha wolf's instinct to protect at all costs. It was part of why Bryce loved her, and why her chest tightened in that moment with that same love and gratitude. Bryce's phone buzzed in her purse, and she fished it out. Danica peered over, noted who was calling, and wagged her tail, ears perking up.
"Do not say a word about Briggs," Bryce warned, and accepted the call.
"Hi, Mom."
"Hey, sweetie."
Ember Quinlan's clear voice filled her ear, drawing a smile from Bryce even with 300 miles between them.
"I wanted to double check that next weekend is still okay to visit."
"Hi, Mommy,"
Danica barked toward the phone. Ember laughed. Ember had always been Mom to Danica, even from their first meeting. And Ember, who had never borne any children beyond Bryce, had been more than glad to find herself with a second, equally willful and troublesome, daughter.
"Danica's with you?"
Bryce rolled her eyes and held out the phone to her friend. Between one step and the next, Danica shifted in a flash of light, the massive wolf shrinking into the lithe humanoid form. Snatching the phone from Bryce, Danica pinned it between her ear and shoulder as she adjusted the white silk blouse Bryce had loaned her, tucking it into her stained jeans. She'd managed to wipe a good amount of the Night Stalker gunk off both the pants and leather jacket, but the t-shirt had apparently been a lost cause. Danica said into the phone,
"Bryce and I are taking a walk."
With Bryce's arched ears, she could hear her mother perfectly as she said,
"Where?"
Ember Quinlan made overprotectiveness a competitive sport. Moving here, to Lunathian, had been a test of wills. Ember had only relented when she learned who Bryce's freshman year roommate was, and then gave Danica a lecture on how to make sure Bryce stayed safe. Randall, Bryce's stepfather, had mercifully cut his wife off after 30 minutes.
"Bryce knows how to defend herself," Randall had reminded Ember. "We saw to that. And Bryce will keep up her training while she's here, won't she?"
Bryce certainly had. She'd hit up the gun range just a few days ago, going through the motions Randall, her true father as far as she was concerned, had taught her since childhood, assembling a gun, taking aim at a target, controlling her breathing. Most days, she found guns to be brutal killing machines and felt grateful that they were highly regulated by the Republic. But given that she had little more to defend herself beyond speed and a few well-placed maneuvers, she'd learned that for a human, a gun could mean the difference between life and slaughter. Danica fibbed.
"We're just heading to one of the hawker stalls in the old square. We wanted some lamb kofta."
Before Ember could continue the interrogation, Danica added,
"Hey, B must have forgotten to tell you that we're actually heading down to Calaxo's next weekend. Ethan's got a sunball game there, and we're all going to cheer him on."
A half-truth. The game was happening, but there had been no discussion of going to watch Connor's youngest brother, CCU's star player. This afternoon, the Pack of Devils was actually heading over to the CCU arena to cheer for Ethan, but Bryce and Danica hadn't bothered to attend an away game since sophomore year, when Danica had been sleeping with one of the defensemen.
"That's too bad," Ember said.
Bryce could practically hear the frown in her mother's tone.
"We were really looking forward to it."
Burning solace, this woman was a master of the guilt trip. Bryce cringed and snatched back the phone.
"So were we, but let's reschedule for next month." "But that's so long from now." "Shit, a client's coming down the street," Bryce lied. "I gotta go." "Bryce Adelaide Quinlan."
"Bye, Mom."
"Bye, Mom,"
Danica echoed, just as Bryce hung up. Bryce sighed toward the sky, ignoring the angels soaring and flapping past, their shadows dancing over the sun-washed streets.
"Message incoming in 3, 2,
her phone buzzed. Ember had written,
"If I didn't know better, I'd think you were avoiding us, Bryce. Your father will be very hurt."
Danica let out a whistle.
"Oh, she's good."
Bryce groaned.
"I'm not letting them come to the city if Briggs is running free."
Danica's smile faded.
"I know. We'll keep pushing them off until it's sorted out."
Thank Cathona for Danica. She always had a plan for everything.
Bryce slid her phone into her purse, leaving her mother's message unanswered. When they reached the gate at the heart of the old square, its quartz archway as clear as a frozen pond, the sun was just hitting its upper edge, refracting and casting small rainbows against one of the buildings flanking it. On summer solstice, when the sun lined up perfectly with the gate, it filled the entire square with rainbows, so many that it was like walking inside a diamond. Tourists milled about, a line of them snaking across the square itself, all waiting for the chance at a photo with the 20-foot-high landmark. One of seven in this city, all carved from enormous blocks of quartz hewn from the Laconian Mountains to the north. The old square gate was often called the Heart Gate, thanks to its location in the dead center of Lunathian, with the six other gates located equidistant from it, each one opening onto a road out of the walled city. They should make a special access lane for residents to cross the square, Bryce muttered, as they edged around tourists and hawkers. And give tourists fines for slow walking, Danica muttered back, but flashed a lupin grin at a young human couple that recognized her, gawked, and began snapping photos. I wonder what they'd think if they knew that Night Stalker's special sauce is all over you, Bryce murmured. Danica elbowed her. Asshole. She threw a friendly wave to the tourists and continued on. On the other side of the Heart Gate, amid a small army of vendors selling food and touristy crap, a second line of people waited to access the golden block sticking out of its southern side. We'll have to cut through them to get across, Bryce said, scowling at the tourists idling in the wilting heat. But Danica halted. Her angular face turned to the gate and the plaque. Let's make a wish.
I'm not waiting in that line.
Usually, they just shouted their wishes drunkenly into the ether late at night when they were staggering home from the White Raven and the square was empty. Bryce checked the time on her phone.
Don't you have to get over to the Comitium?
The governor's five-towered stronghold was at least a 15-minute walk away. I've got time, Danica said, and grabbed Bryce's hand, tugging her through the crowds and toward the real tourist draw of the gate. Jutting out of the quartz about 4 feet off the ground lay the dial pad, a solid gold block embedded with seven different gems, each for a different quarter of the city, the insignia of each district etched beneath it. Emerald and a rose for five roses, opal and a pair of wings for the CBD, ruby and a heart for the old square, sapphire and an oak tree for Moonwood, amethyst and a human hand for Asphodel Meadows, tiger's eye and a serpent for the meat market, and onyx, so black it gobbled the light, and a set of skull and crossbones for the bone quarter. Beneath the arc of stones and etched emblems, a small round disc rose up slightly, its metal worn down by countless hands and paws and fins and any other manner of limb. A sign beside it read, "Touch at your own risk. Do not use between sundown and sunrise. Violators will be fined." The people in line, waiting for access to the disc, seemed to have no problem with the risks. A pair of giggling teenage male shifters, some kind of feline from their sense, goaded each other forward, elbowing and taunting, daring the other to touch the disc. Pathetic, Danica said, striding past the line, the ropes, and a bored-looking city guard, a young fey female, to the very front. She fished a badge from inside her leather coat and flashed it at the guard, who stiffened as she realized who'd cut the line. She didn't even look at the golden emblem of the crescent moon bow with an arrow knocked through it before stepping back. Official ox business, Danica declared with an unnervingly straight face. It'll just be a minute. Bryce stifled her laughter, well aware of the glares fixed on their backs from the line. Danica drawled to the teenage boys, if you're not going to do it, then clear off. They whirled toward her and went white as death. Danica smiled, showing nearly all her teeth. It wasn't a pleasant sight.
Holy shit,
whispered one of them. Bryce hid her smile as well. It never got old, the awe, mostly because she knew Danica had earned it. Every damned day, Danica earned the awe that bloomed across the faces of strangers when they spotted her corn silk hair and that neck tattoo. And the fear that made the lowlifes in this city think twice before fucking with her and the pack of devils. Except for Philip Briggs. Bryce sent a prayer to Ogenesis' blue depths that the sea goddess would whisper her wisdom to Briggs to keep his distance from Danica if he ever really did walk free. The boys stepped aside, and it only took a few milliseconds for them to notice Bryce, too. The awe on their faces turned to blatant interest. Bryce snorted, "Keep dreaming." One of them stammered, turning his attention from Bryce to Danica.
My history teacher said the gates were originally communication devices.
I bet you get all the ladies with those stellar factoids, Danica said without looking back at them, unimpressed and uninterested. Message received, they slunk back to the line. Bryce smirked and stepped up to her friend's side, peering down at the dial pad. The teenager was right, though. The seven gates of this city, each set along a ley line running through Lunathian, had been designed as a quick way for the guards in the districts to speak to each other centuries ago. When someone merely placed a hand against the golden disc in the center of the pad and spoke, the wielder's voice would travel to the other gates, a gem lighting up with the district from which the voice originated. Of course, it required a drop of magic to do so, literally sucked it like a vampire from the veins of the person who touched the pad, a tickling zap of power, gone forever. Bryce raised her eyes to the bronze plaque above her head. The quartz gates were memorials, though she didn't know for which conflict or war. But each bore the same plaque. The power shall always belong to those who give their lives to the city. Considering it was a statement that could be construed as being in opposition to the Asteri's rule, Bryce was always surprised that they allowed the gates to continue to stand. But after becoming obsolete with the advent of phones, the gates had found a second life when kids and tourists began using them, having their friends go to the other gates in the city so they could whisper dirty words or marvel at the sheer novelty of such an antiquated method of communication. Not surprisingly, come weekends, drunk assholes, a category to which Bryce and Danica firmly belonged, became such a pain in the ass with their shouting through the gates that the city had instituted hours of operation. And then dumb superstition grew, claiming the gate could make wishes come true, and that to give over a droplet of your power was to make an offering to the five gods. It was bullshit, Bryce knew. But if it made Danica not dread Briggs's release so much, well, it was worth it.
What are you going to wish for?
Bryce asked when Danica stared down at the disc, the gems dark above it. The emerald for Phyro lit up, a young female voice coming through to shriek,
"Titties!"
People laughed around them, the sound like water trickling over stone, and Bryce chuckled. But Danica's face had gone solemn.
"I've got too many things to wish for," she said.
Before Bryce could ask, Danica shrugged. "But I think I'll wish for Ethan to win his sunball game tonight." With that, she set her palm onto the disc. Bryce watched as her friend let out a shiver and quietly laughed, stepping back. Her caramel eyes shone. "Your turn."
"You know I have barely any magic worth taking, but okay,"
Bryce said, not to be outdone, even by an alpha wolf. From the moment Bryce walked into her dorm room freshman year, they'd done everything together. Just the two of them, as it always would be. They even planned to make the drop together, to freeze into immortality at the same breath, with members of the Pack of Devils anchoring them. Technically, it wasn't true immortality. The Vanir did age and die, either of natural causes or other methods, but the aging process was so slowed after the drop that, depending on one's species, it could take centuries to show a wrinkle. The Fae could last 1,000 years, the Shifters and Watchers usually 5 centuries, the Angels somewhere between. Full humans did not make the drop, as they bore no magic. And compared to humans,
with their ordinary lifespans and slow healing. The Vanir were essentially immortal. Some species bore children who didn't even enter maturity until they were in their 80s. And most were very, very hard to kill. But Bryce had rarely thought about where she'd fall on that spectrum, whether her half-fey heritage would grant her 100 years or 1,000. It didn't matter, so long as Danica was there for all of it, starting with the drop. They'd take the deadly plunge into their matured power together, encounter whatever lay at the bottom of their souls, and then race back up to life before the lack of oxygen rendered them brain dead, or just plain dead. Yet while Bryce would inherit barely enough power to do cool party tricks, Danica was expected to claim a sea of power that would put her ranking far past Sabine's, likely equal to that of Fey royalty, maybe even beyond the Autumn King himself. It was unheard of for a shifter to have that sort of power, yet all the standard childhood tests had confirmed it. Once Danica dropped, she'd become a considerable power among the wolves, the likes of which had not been seen since the elder days across the sea. Danica wouldn't just become the prime of the Crescent City wolves. No, she had the potential to be the alpha of all wolves on the fucking planet. Danica never seemed to give two shits about it, didn't plan for her future based on it. 27 was the ideal age to make the drop, they'd decided together, after years of mercilessly judging the various immortals who marked their lives by centuries and millennia. Right before any permanent lines or wrinkles or gray hairs, they merely said to anyone who inquired, "What's the point of being immortal badasses if we have sagging tits?" "Vain assholes," Fury had hissed when they'd explained it the first time. Fury, who had made the drop at age 21, hadn't chosen the age for herself. It had just happened, or had been forced upon her, they didn't know for sure. Fury's attendance at CCU had only been a front for a mission. Most of her time was spent doing truly fucked up things for disgusting amounts of money over in Pangera. She made it a point never to give details. "Assassin," Danica claimed. Even Sweet Juniper, the fawn who occupied the fourth side of their little friendship square, admitted the odds were that Fury was a merc. Whether Fury was occasionally employed by the Asteri and their puppet Imperial Senate was up for debate, too. But none of them really cared, not when Fury always had their back when they needed it, and even when they didn't. Bryce's hand hovered over the golden disc. Danica's gaze was a cool weight on her. "Come on, Bee, don't be a wimp." Bryce sighed and set her hand on the pad. "I wish Danica would get a manicure. Her nails look like shit." Lightning zapped through her, a slight vacuuming around her belly button, and then Danica was laughing, shoving her.
"You fucking dick."
Bryce slung an arm around Danica's shoulders.
"You deserved it."
Danica thanked the security guard, who beamed at the attention, and ignored the tourists still snapping photos. They didn't speak until they reached the northern edge of the square, where Danica would head toward the angel-filled skies and towers of the CBD, to the sprawling Comitium complex in its heart, and Bryce toward Luna's temple, three blocks up. Danica jerked her chin toward the streets behind Bryce.
"I'll see you at home, all right?"
"Be careful."
Bryce blew out a breath, trying to shake her unease.
"I know how to look out for myself, Bee,"
Danica said. But love shone in her eyes, gratitude that crushed Bryce's chest, merely for the fact that someone cared whether she lived or died. Sabine was a piece of shit, had never whispered or hinted who Danica's father might be. So Danica had grown up with absolutely no one except her grandfather, who was too old and withdrawn to spare Danica from her mother's cruelty. Bryce inclined her head toward the CBD.
"Good luck. Don't piss off too many people."
"You know I will,"
Danica said, with a grin that didn't meet her eyes. Chapter 3. The pack of devils was already at her apartment by the time Bryce got home from work.
It had been impossible to miss the roaring laughter that met her before she'd even cleared the second floor stairwell landing, as well as the canine yips of amusement. Both had continued as she ascended the remaining level of the walk-up apartment building, during which time Bryce grumbled to herself about her plans for a quiet evening on the couch being ruined. Chanting a string of curses that would make her mother proud, Bryce unlocked the blue-painted iron door to the apartment, bracing for the onslaught of lupin bossiness, arrogance, and general nosiness in all matters of her life. And that was just Danica. Danica's pack made each of those things an art form, mostly because they claimed Bryce as one of their own, even if she didn't bear the tattoo of their sigil down the side of her neck. Sometimes she felt bad for Danica's future mate, whoever that would be. The poor bastard wouldn't know what hit him when he bound himself to her. Unless he was wolf-kind himself, though Danica had about as much interest in sleeping with a wolf as Bryce did. That is to say, not a goddamned shred. Giving the door a good shove with her shoulder, its warped edges got stuck more often than not, mostly thanks to the romping of the hellions currently spread across the several sagging couches and armchairs, Bryce sighed as she found six pairs of eyes fixed on her, and six grins. How was the game? She asked no one in particular, chucking her keys into the lopsided ceramic bowl Danica had half-assed during a fluff pottery course in college. She'd heard nothing from Danica regarding the Briggs meeting beyond a general, "I'll tell you at home." It couldn't have been that bad if Danica made it to the sunball game. She'd even sent Bryce a photo of the whole pack in front of the field, with Ethan a small, helmeted figure in the background. A message from the star player himself had popped up later. "Next time, you better be with them, Quinlan." She'd written back, "Did baby pup miss me?"
"You know it," Ethan had answered.
"We won," Connor drawled from where he lounged on her favorite spot on the couch, his gray CCU sunball t-shirt rumpled enough to reveal the cut muscle and golden skin.
"Ethan scored the winning goal,"
Bronson said, still wearing a blue and silver jersey with Holstrom on the back. Connor's little brother Ethan held an unofficial membership in the Pack of Devils. Ethan also happened to be Bryce's second favorite person after Danica. Their message chain was an endless stream of snark and teasing, swapped photos, and good-natured grousing about Connor's bossiness.
"Again?"
Bryce asked, kicking off her 4-inch pearl-white heels.
"Can't Ethan share some of the glory with the other boys?"
Normally, Ethan would have been sitting right on that couch beside his brother, forcing Bryce to wedge herself between them while they watched whatever TV show was on. But on game nights, he usually opted to party with his teammates. A half-smile tugged at a corner of Connor's mouth, as Bryce held his stare for longer than most people considered wise. His five packmates, two still in wolf form with bushy tails swishing, wisely kept their mouths and maws shut. It was common knowledge that Connor would have been alpha of the Pack of Devils if Danica weren't around. But Connor didn't resent it. His ambitions didn't run that way, unlike Sabine's. Bryce nudged her backup dance bag over on the coat rack to make room for her purse and asked the wolves,
"What are you watching tonight?"
Whatever it was, she'd already decided to curl up with a romance novel in her room, with the door shut. Natalie, flipping through celebrity gossip magazines on the couch, didn't lift her head as she answered,
"Some new legal procedural about a pack of lions taking on an evil fey corporation."
"Sounds like a real award winner," Bryce said. Bronson grunted his disapproval. The massive male's tastes skewed more toward art house flicks and documentaries. Unsurprisingly, he was never allowed to select the entertainment for pack night. Connor ran a calloused finger down the rolled arm of the couch.
"You're home late."
"I have a job," Bryce said. "You might want to get one. Stop being a leech on my couch."
This wasn't exactly fair. As Danica's second, Connor acted as her enforcer. To keep this city safe, he'd killed, tortured, maimed, and then gone back out and done it again before the moon had even set. He never complained about it. None of them did.
"What's the point in bitching?"
Danica had said when Bryce asked how she endured the brutality, when there's no choice in joining the auxiliary. The predator-born shifters were destined for certain ox packs before they were even born. Bryce tried not to glance at the horned wolf tattooed on the side of Connor's neck, proof of that predestined lifetime of service, of his eternal loyalty to Danica, the pack of devils, and the ox. Connor just looked Bryce over with that half-smile. It set her teeth to grinding.
Danica's in the kitchen, eating half the pizza before we can get a bite.
I am not, was the muffled reply. Connor's smile grew. Bryce's breathing turned a shade uneven at that smile, the wicked light in his eyes. The rest of the pack remained dutifully focused on the television screen, pretending to watch the nightly news. Swallowing, Bryce asked him,
anything I should know?
Translation, was the Briggs meeting a disaster? Connor knew what she meant. He always did. He jerked his head to the kitchen.
You'll see.
Translation, not great. Bryce winced and managed to tear her gaze away from him so she could pad into the galley kitchen. She felt Connor stare on her every step of the way. And maybe she swished her hips, only a tiny bit. Danica was indeed shoveling a slice down her throat, her eyes wide in warning for Bryce to keep her mouth shut. Bryce noted the unspoken plea and merely nodded. A half-empty bottle of beer dripped condensation onto the white plastic counter Danica leaned against, her borrowed silk shirt damp with sweat around the collar. Her braid drooped over her slim shoulder, the few colorful streaks unusually muted. Even her pale skin, usually flushed with color and health, seemed ashen. Granted, the crappy kitchen lighting, two meager recessed orbs of first light, wasn't exactly favorable to anyone, but beer, food, the pack keeping their distance, and that hollow weariness in her friend's eyes? Yeah, some shit had gone down in that meeting. Bryce tugged open the fridge, grabbing a beer for herself. The pack all had different preferences and were prone to coming over whenever they felt like it, so the fridge was crammed with bottles and cans and what she could have sworn was a jug of mead? Must be Bronson's. Bryce grabbed one of Natalie's favorites, a cloudy, milky-tasting beer heavy on the hops, and twisted off the top.
Briggs?
Officially released. Micah, the Autumn King, and the Oracle pored over every law and bylaw and still couldn't find a way around that loophole. Rune even had Declan run some of his fancy tech searches and found nothing. Sabine ordered the Scythe Moon pack to watch Briggs tonight, along with some of the 33rd. The packs had mandatory nights off once a week, and this was the pack of devils, no negotiating. Otherwise, Bryce knew Danica would be out there, watching Briggs's every move.
So, you're all in agreement, Bryce said. At least that's good.
Yeah, until Briggs blows something or someone up. Danica shook her head with disgust. It's fucking bullshit. Bryce studied her friend carefully. The tension around her mouth, her sweaty neck.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. The words were spoken too quickly to be believable.
Something's been eating at you. Shit like this thing with Briggs is big, but you always bounce back.
Bryce narrowed her eyes.
What aren't you telling me?
Danica's eyes gleamed. Nothing. She swigged from her beer. There was only one other answer.
I take it Sabine was in rare form this afternoon.
Danica just tore into her pizza. Bryce swallowed two mouthfuls of beer, watching Danica blankly consider the teal cabinets above the counter, the paint chipping at the edges. Her friend chewed slowly, then sat around a mouthful of bread and cheese. Sabine cornered me after the meeting, right in the hall outside Micah's office, so everyone could hear her tell me that two CCU research students got killed near Luna's temple last week during the blackout. My shift. My section. My fault.
Bryce winced. It took a week to hear about this?
Apparently.
Who killed them?
Crescent City University students were always out in the old square, always causing trouble. Even as alums, Bryce and Danica often bemoaned the fact that there wasn't a sky-high electric fence penning CCU students into their corner of the city, just to keep them from puking and pissing all over the old square every Friday night to Sunday morning. Danica drank again.
No clue who did it.
A shiver, her caramel eyes darkening. Even with their sense marking them as human, it took 20 minutes to identify who they were. They were ripped to shreds and partially eaten. Bryce tried not to imagine it.
Motive?
Danica's throat bobbed. No idea either. But Sabine told me in front of everyone exactly what she thought of such a public butchering happening on my watch.
Bryce asked, what did the Prime say about it?
Nothing, Danica said. The old man fell asleep during the meeting, and Sabine didn't bother to wake him before cornering me.
It would be soon now, everyone said. Only a matter of a year or two until the current Prime of Wolves, nearly 400 years old, had his sailing across the Istros to the Bone Quarter for his final sleep. There was no way the black boat would tip for him during the final rite. No way his soul would be deemed unworthy and given to the river. He'd be welcomed into the Under King's realm, granted access to its mist-veiled shores. And then Sabine's reign would begin. God spare them all.
It's not your fault, you know,
Bryce said, flipping open the cardboard lids of the two closest pizza boxes. Sausage, pepperoni, and meatball in one. The other held cured meats and stinky cheeses. Bronson's choice, no doubt.
I know,
Danica muttered, draining the last of her beer, clunking the bottle in the sink, and rooting around in the fridge for another. Every muscle in her lean body seemed taut, on a hair trigger. She slammed the fridge shut and leaned against it. Danica didn't meet Bryce's eyes as she breathed.
I was 3 blocks away that night. 3. And I didn't hear or see or smell them being shredded.
Bryce became aware of the silence from the other room. Keen hearing in both human and wolf form meant endless, entitled eavesdropping. They could finish this conversation later. Bryce flipped open the rest of the pizza boxes, surveying the culinary landscape.
Shouldn't you put them out of their misery and let them get a bite before you demolish the rest?
She'd had the pleasure of witnessing Danica eat 3 large pies in one sitting. In this sort of mood, Danica might very well break her record and hit 4.
Please let us eat,
begged Bronson's deep, rumbling voice from the other room. Danica swigged from her beer.
Come get it, mongrels.
The wolves rushed in. In the frenzy, Bryce was nearly flattened against the back wall of the kitchen, the monthly calendar pinned to it, crumpling behind her. Damn it, she loved that calendar. Hottest Bachelors of Crescent City, clothing optional edition. This month had the most gorgeous demonaki she'd ever seen, his propped leg on a stool the only thing keeping everything from being shown. She smoothed out the new wrinkles in all the tan skin and muscles, the curling horns, and then turned to scowl at the wolves. A step away, Danica stood among her pack like a stone in a river. She smirked at Bryce. Any update on your hunt for the horn?
No.
Jessica must be thrilled. Bryce grimaced.
Overjoyed.
She'd seen Jessica for all of 2 minutes this afternoon, before the sorceress threatened to turn Bryce into a donkey, and then vanished in a chauffeured sedan to the gods knew where. Maybe off on some errand for the Under King and the dark house he ruled. Danica grinned.
Don't you have that date with What's-His-Face tonight?
The question clanged through Bryce.
Shit, shit, yes, she winced at the kitchen clock. In an hour.
Connor, taking an entire pizza box for himself, stiffened. He'd made his thoughts on Bryce's rich-ass boyfriend clear since the first date 2 months ago. Just as Bryce had made it perfectly clear, she did not give a fuck about Connor's opinion regarding her love life. Bryce took in his muscled back as Connor stalked out, rolling his broad shoulders. Danica frowned. She never missed a fucking thing.
I need to get dressed, Bryce said, scowling. And his name is Reed, and you know it.
A wolfish smile. Reed's a stupid fucking name, Danica said.
One, I think it's a hot name, and two, Reed is hot.
God's help her. Reed Redner was hot as hell, though the sex was fine. Standard. She'd gotten off, but she'd really had to work for it, and not in the way she sometimes liked to work for it. More in the sense of,
slow down. Put that here. Can we switch positions?
But she'd slept with him only twice, and she told herself that it could take time to find the right rhythm with a partner, even if, Danica just said it, if he grabs his phone to check his messages before his dick's barely out of you again, please have the self-respect to kick his balls across the room and come home to me.
Fucking hell, Danica, Bryce hissed. Say it a little goddamn louder.
The wolves had gone silent. Even their munching had stopped, then resumed just a decibel too loudly.
At least he's got a good job,
Bryce said to Danica, who crossed her slender arms, arms that hid tremendous ferocious strength, and gave her a look. A look that said, yeah, one that Reed's daddy gave him. Bryce added,
and at least he's not some psychotic alpha hole who will demand a 3-day sex marathon and then call me his mate, lock me in his house, and never let me out again.
Which was why Reed, human, okay at sex Reed, was perfect. You could use a 3-day sex marathon, Danica quipped.
You're to blame for this, you know.
Danica waved a hand. Yeah, yeah, my first and last mistake, setting you two up. Danica knew Reed casually through the part-time security work she did for his father's business, a massive human-owned magitech company in the central business district. Danica claimed that the work was too boring to bother explaining, but paid well enough that she couldn't say no. And more than that, it was a job she chose, not the life she'd been shoved into. So between her patrols and obligations with the Ox, Danica was often at the towering skyscraper in the CBD, pretending she had a shot at a normal life. It was unheard of for any Ox member to have a secondary job, for an Alpha especially, but Danica made it work. It didn't hurt that everyone wanted a piece of Redner Industries these days. Even Micah Domitus was a major investor in its cutting-edge experiments. It was nothing out of the ordinary when the governor invested in everything from tech to vineyards to schools. But since Micah was on Sabine's eternal shit list, pissing off her mother by working for a human company he supported was likely even better for Danica than the sense of free will and generous pay. Danica and Reed had been in the same presentation one afternoon months ago, exactly when Bryce had been single and complaining constantly about it. Danica had given Bryce's number to Reed in a last-ditch effort to preserve her sanity. Bryce smoothed a hand over her dress.
I need to change. Save me a slice.
Aren't you going out for dinner? Bryce cringed.
Yeah, to one of those frilly spots where they give you salmon mousse on a cracker and call it a meal.
Danica shuddered. Definitely fill up before then.
A slice, Bryce said, pointing at Danica. Remember my slice.
She eyed the one remaining box and padded out of the kitchen. The pack of devils were now all in human form, save for Zelda. Pizza boxes balanced on knees or spread on the worn blue rug. Bronson was indeed swigging from the ceramic jug of mead, his brown eyes fixed on the nightly news broadcast. The news about Briggs's release, along with grainy footage of the human male being escorted out of the jail complex in a white jumpsuit, began blasting. Whoever held the remote quickly changed the channel to a documentary on the Black River Delta. Natalie gave Bryce a shit-eating grin as she strode for her bedroom door at the opposite end of the living room. Oh, Bryce wouldn't live down that little tidbit about Reed's performance in the bedroom anytime soon, especially when Natalie was sure to make it a reflection on Bryce's skills.
Don't even start, Bryce warned her.
Natalie clamped her lips together, like she could hardly keep the howl of wicked amusement contained. Her sleek black hair seemed to quiver with the effort of holding in her laughter, her onyx eyes near glowing. Bryce pointedly ignored Connor's heavy golden stare as he tracked her across the space. Wolves. God's damned wolves shoving their noses into her business. There would never be any mistaking them for humans, though their forms were nearly identical. Too tall, too muscled, too still. Even the way they tore into their pizzas, each movement deliberate and graceful, was a silent reminder of what they could do to anyone who crossed them. Bryce walked over Zack's sprawled long legs and carefully avoided stepping on Zelda's snow-white tail, where she lay on the floor beside her brother. The twin white wolves, both slender and dark-haired in human form, were utterly terrifying when they shifted. The ghosts, the whispered nickname followed them everywhere. So, yeah, Bryce tried really hard not to step on Zelda's fluffy tail. Thorn, at least, threw Bryce a sympathetic smile from where he sat in the half-rotted leather armchair near the television, his CCU sunball hat turned backward. He was the only other person in the apartment who understood how meddlesome the pack could be, and who cared as much about Danica's moods, about Sabine's ruthlessness. It was a long shot for an Omega like Thorn to ever be noticed by an Alpha like Danica. Not that Thorn had ever so much as hinted at it to any of them. But Bryce saw it, the gravitational pull that seemed to happen whenever Danica and Thorn were in a room together, like they were two stars orbiting each other. Mercifully, Bryce reached her bedroom without any comments regarding her sort of boyfriend's prowess, and shut the door behind her firmly enough to tell them all to fuck off. She made it three steps toward her sagging green dresser before laughter barked through the apartment. It was silenced a moment later by a vicious, not quite human snarl, deep and rumbling and utterly lethal. Not Danica's snarl, which was like death incarnate, soft and husky and cold. This was Connor's, full of heat and temper and feeling. Bryce showered off the dust and grime that seemed to coat her whenever she made the 15-block walk between the apartment and the slim sandstone building that Griffin Antiquities occupied. A few carefully placed pins erased the end-of-day limpness that usually plagued her heavy sheet of wine-red hair, and she hastily applied a fresh coat of mascara to bring some life back into her amber eyes. From shower to sliding on her black stiletto heels, it was a grand total of 20 minutes. Proof, she realized, of how little she really cared about this date. She spent a goddamned hour on her hair and makeup every morning, not counting the 30-minute shower to get herself gleaming, shaved, and moisturized. But 20 minutes? For dinner at the Pearl and Rose? Yeah, Danica had a point, and Bryce knew the bitch was watching the clock and would probably ask if the short prep time was reflective of how long, exactly, Reed could keep it going. Bryce glared in the direction of the wolves beyond the door of her cozy bedroom before surveying the quiet haven around her. Every wall was bedecked in posters of legendary performances at the Crescent City Ballet. Once, she'd imagined herself up there among the lithe veneer, exploding across the stage in turn after turn, or making audiences weep with an agonizing death scene. Once, she'd imagined there might be a spot for a half-human female on that stage. Even being told over and over that she had the wrong body type hadn't stopped her from loving to dance, hadn't stopped that heady rush seeing a dance performed live, or her taking amateur classes after work, or her following CCB's dancers the way Connor, Ethan, and Thorn followed sports teams. Nothing could ever stop her from craving that soaring sensation she found when she was dancing, whether in class or at a club or even on the goddamned street. Juniper, at least, hadn't been deterred, had decided that she was in it for the long haul, that a fawn would defy the gods and grace a stage built for fae and nymphs and sylphs and leave them all in her dust. She'd done it, too. Bryce loosed a long sigh. Time to go. It was a 20-minute walk to the Pearl and Rose, and in these heels, it'd take her 25. No point in getting in a taxi during the chaos and congestion of Thursday night in the old square, when the car would just sit there. She stabbed pearl studs into her ears, hoping half-heartedly that they'd add some class to what might be considered a somewhat scandalous dress. But she was 23, and she might as well enjoy her generously curved figure. She gave her gold-dusted legs a little smile as she twisted in front of the full-length mirror propped against the wall to admire the slope of her ass in the skin-tight gray dress, the hint of text from that still-sore new tattoo peeking over the plunging back, before she stepped into the living room again. Danica let out a wicked laugh that rumbled over the nature show the wolves were watching. I bet 50 silver marks the bouncers don't let you through the doors looking like that. Bryce flipped off her friend as the pack chuckled.
I'm sorry if I make you feel self-conscious about your bony ass, Danica.
Thorne barked a laugh. At least Danica makes up for it with her winning personality. Bryce smirked at the handsome Omega.
That must explain why I have a date and she hasn't been on one in, what's it now?
3 years? Thorne winked, his blue eyes sliding toward Danica's scowling face.
Must be why.
Danica slouched in her chair and propped her bare feet on the coffee table. Each toenail was painted a different color. It's only been 2 years, she muttered. Assholes. Bryce patted Danica's silken head as she passed. Danica nipped at her fingers, teeth flashing. Bryce chuckled, entering the narrow kitchen. She pawed through the upper cabinets, glass rattling as she searched for the gin. She knocked back a shot, then another.
Rough night ahead?
Connor asked from where he leaned against the kitchen doorway, arms crossed over his muscular chest. A drop of gin had landed on her chin. Bryce narrowly avoided wiping the sin-red lipstick off her mouth with the back of her wrist, and instead opted for patting it away with a leftover napkin from the pizza place, like a proper person.
That color should be called blowjob red,
Danica had said the first time Bryce had worn it, because that's all any male will think about when you wear it. Indeed, Connor's eyes had dipped right to her lips, so Bryce said as nonchalantly as she could,
you know I like to enjoy my Thursday nights. Why not kick it off early?
She balanced on her toes as she put the gin back in the upper cupboard, the hem of her dress rising precariously high. Connor studied the ceiling as if it were immensely interesting, his gaze only snapping to hers as she settled on her feet again. In the other room, someone turned the volume on the television up to an apartment rattling level.
Thank you, Danica.
Even Wolf Hearing couldn't sort through that cacophony to eavesdrop. Connor's sensuous mouth twitched upward, but he remained in the doorway. Bryce swallowed, wondering how gross it would be to chase away the burn of the gin with the beer she'd left warming on the counter. Connor said,
Look, we've known each other a while.
Is this a rehearsed speech? He straightened, color staining his cheeks. The second in the pack of devils, the most feared and lethal of all of the auxiliary units, was blushing.
No.
That sounded like a rehearsed introduction to me.
Can you let me ask you out? Or do I need to get in a fight with you about my phrasing first?
She snorted, but her guts twisted.
I don't date wolves.
Connor threw her a cocky grin.
Make an exception.
No.
But she smiled slightly. Connor merely said with the unwavering arrogance that only an immortal predator could achieve.
You want me. I want you. It's been that way for a while, and playing with these human males hasn't done a damn thing to make you forget that, has it?
No, it hadn't. But she said, her voice mercifully calm despite her thundering heart.
Connor, I'm not going out with you. Danica is bossy enough. I don't need another wolf, especially a male wolf, trying to run my life. I don't need any more veneer shoving into my business.
His golden eyes dimmed.
I'm not your father.
He didn't mean Randall. She shoved off the counter, marching toward him, and the apartment door beyond. She was going to be late.
That has nothing to do with this, with you. My answer is no.
Connor didn't move, and she halted mere inches away. Even in heels, even though she fell on the taller side of average height, he towered over her, dominated the entire space just by breathing, like any alpha hole would, like what her fae father had done to 19-year-old Ember Quinlan when he'd pursued her, seduced her, tried to keep her, and gone so far into possessive territory that the moment Ember had realized she was carrying his child, carrying Bryce, she ran before he could scent it and lock her up in his villa in Fyro until she grew too old to interest him. Which was something Bryce didn't let herself consider. Not after the blood tests had been done and she'd walked out of the Medwitch's office, knowing that she'd taken after her fae father in more ways than the red hair and pointed ears. She would have to bury her mother one day. Bury Randall, too, which was utterly unexpected if he were human. But the fact that she'd go on living for a few more centuries, with only photos and videos to remind her of their voices and faces, made her stomach twist. She should have had a third shot of gin. Connor remained unmoving in the doorway.
One date won't send me into a territorial hissy fit. It doesn't even have to be a date, just pizza,
he finished, glancing at the stacked boxes.
You and I go out plenty.
They did, on nights when Danica was called in to meet with Sabine or the other Ox commanders. He often brought over food, or he met up with her at one of the many restaurants lining the apartment's lively block.
If it's not a date, then how is it different?
It'd be a trial run for a date,
Connor said through his teeth. She lifted a brow.
A date to decide if I want to date you?
You're impossible.
He pushed off the door jamb.
See you later.
Smiling to herself, she trailed him out of the kitchen, cringing at the monstrously loud television the wolves were all watching very, very intently. Even Danica knew there were limits to how far she could push Connor without serious consequences. For a heartbeat, Bryce debated grabbing the second by the shoulder and explaining that he'd be better off finding a nice, sweet wolf who wanted to have a litter of pups, and that he didn't really want someone who was 10 kinds of fucked up. Still liked to party until she was no better than a puking in an alley CCU student, and wasn't entirely sure if she could love someone. Not when Danica was all she really needed anyway. But she didn't grab Connor, and by the time Bryce scooped her keys from the bowl beside the door, he'd slumped onto the couch, again in her spot, and was staring pointedly at the screen. Bye, she said to no one in particular. Danica met her gaze from across the room, her eyes still wary but faintly amused. She winked.
Light it up, bitch.
Light it up, asshole, Bryce replied, the farewell sliding off her tongue with the ease of years of usage. But it was Danica's added,
love you,
as Bryce slipped out into the grimy hallway, that made her hesitate with her hand on the knob. It had taken Danica a few years to say those words.